And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and it sounds like I'm calling a horse race. Did the Kentucky Derby run or not?
I don't know. I wasn't there.
I don't want to miss that. I can't. I watch one or two horse races a year. I get all excited. It's a good thing. I've become an addict. Phil, you've got a special guest we're going to get later on. Who is that?
Dan Wilcox is a poet in Albany, New York. He's a retired...
What's he going to talk about?
He's going to talk about sitting down on the road in Syracuse, New York, outside a National Guard base where the drones are dispatched from, and how that got the authorities a little upset when a bunch of old people came and sat down on the road outside there.
He's a vet.
He's a vet. Dan is a vet, a Vietnam-era vet, and it was a lot of very ordinary folks who don't think that their country should be killing people with drones in their name.
Uh-huh. Well, semper fi, as we used to say. Good for him. No, that'll be very, very, very interesting. You surprised me when you say he's in New York, because I thought everything was... I've been blaming Utah and Nevada, so it's New York.
Well, they don't really know where, but they know that at one point this base was the origin of the drone dispatches.
Well, we're going to be talking to him later in the program, but right now I believe we are joined by the author of a book, An Ordinary Man. It's Paul Roussa-Sabagina, and Paul Roussa-Sabagina is the central figure in the film Hotel Rwanda. He is a decorated, recognized individual who saved thousands of lives in Rwanda in 1994. And he is the head of an important foundation, and I think he's with us now. Are you there, Paul?
Yes, Phil, I'm there.
I'm very glad to be talking to you, Paul. Last month, of course, April, we went through a number of occasions around the world marking the war and the genocide of 1994, and... As will happen with events of this type, of course, they don't get the press attention that they really deserve. Did you yourself participate in any events commemorating the genocide of 1994?
Definitely, I had no choice. Mm-hmm. I was in the United States until April 5th. Mm-hmm. But in the afternoon, I had to travel and come back to Europe because we had to show to the whole world that at a given time, this was in 1994, on April 6th,
yes,
a good number of people were killed because of what they are, because of their ethnicity, because of what they believed, and this became the Rwandan genocide, according to the UN Resolution 955 of November 8th, 1994.
Mm-hmm. And did you speak at one of these occasions, or you simply attended?
No one was supposed to be speaking that time. Mm-hmm. It was a commemoration day, and I was one of the people. As I said, I was traveling for the whole night, and the following day at 1 p.m., I was just with others commemorating.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a foundation, and it's the letter I should tell everyone. It's hrrfoundation.org. At this site, you have been continuing to discuss not only the events of 1994, but how the regard about for these events has unfolded. And you have raised an issue, which I think is a common one wherever one discusses this around the world, and that is reconciliation. In your opinion, has reconciliation been achieved? And can you talk about why you have focused on that matter?
You see, let me start for why am I focused on that matter? I'm focused on reconciliation because this is what has been missing to Rwandans since the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. For the last 50 years in Rwanda, there always has been a winner and a loser. Yes. Either Tutsis win and Hutus lose and lose everything and go to exile, or the other way around. Therefore, after my experiences throughout my whole life, and also being born in a mixed family, when one of my parents was a Hutu, another one a Tutsi, mm-hmm. after getting married to a Tutsi girl, because I'm a Hutu by my father, mm-hmm. I had no choice. Then sitting down and saying that, wait a minute, I'm a Rwandan, and I belong to both ethnic groups. What can I do to both, to help both? Therefore, to help both, I decided to stand in the middle of Hutus and Tutsis, and I suggest, according to my foundation's principles, rules, and regulations, we decided to bring Rwandans from both sides, both extremes, around the table, give them an opportunity to look at each other in a face-to-face, and then bring the whole truth. And through the whole truth, they say they people can then reconcile. And then, after reconciliation, we will think about a sustainable peace. Mm-hmm. And this is what we have missed forever in this country called, small country called Rwanda, for the last 50 years. There has never been a dialogue, and this is our solution. Mm-hmm. This is the solution from the Hotel Rwanda Rusesabagina Foundation. It is to solve, for the first time, to try and solve our conflict using words. We believe that words are the best weapons ever, and they can also be the worst, depending on what we want to achieve.
Yes,
this is what I write, mm-hmm. An Ordinary Man, my autobiography.
Yeah, we're speaking to Paul Rusesabagina of the Hotel Rwanda Rusesabagina Foundation. Of course, Paul was the manager at the Mille Collines, where many went to have it because they felt rightly that their lives were endangered, and Paul zealously worked to save their lives. And of course, won a lot of recognition for that. But Paul, it must be very difficult work. How has the two communities responded to you? Do you have Hutu and Tutsi in the organization, and are they optimistic?
Definitely. Today, since July last year, 2012, I decided to join politics. And also joining politics, my main objective was to bring Rwandans, Hutus and Tutsis, all together. And since that time, when we notice that the international community is also joining us, mm-hmm. just for that matter of reconciling Rwandans, we have already started, brought Rwandans together, and we are working in the PDR political party. We are working with Hutus and Tutsis all together.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to ask you about the case of the woman from I'm going to say Holland, who was a Rwandan by birth, but who was not in Rwanda in 1994. That's Victoire Ingabire. She returned to Rwanda, and she said her goal was to bring reconciliation, and she raised the issue of the loss of thousands, tens of thousands of Hutus during the 1994 events. She also was the, in order to discuss the matter, had put herself forward as a candidate for president. She ended up being arrested by the authorities and remains in prison. Do you have opinions about her situation?
Well, as they say, they are two best allies and friends. And those two best allies and friends are time and the truth. The time and the truth are two best friends. When Victoire went to Rwanda in January 2010, she was an innocent woman who thought that politically Rwanda is a country where each and everybody would feel innocently and develop, bring his or her own contribution to develop a nation. That was her main objective. But when she arrived in her country, unfortunately, because she was speaking out the whole truth, she was telling today's Rwandan president what his ears did not want to hear. This was democracy. The answer from the president and the political, his political or movement, rebellion movement, because it's still the movement in power in Rwanda is a front, the RPF. They did not want anyone who would say things the way they don't want. Victoire was put in prison, accused of each and every wrong thing. They tortured innocent or some former FDLR. FDLR is a military movement which is actually operating in the Congo of Hutus who left Rwanda in 1994. They had about three or four of them. They tortured them so that they could also accuse her. But accusing her of what? Of forming rebellion in which she was never involved? Fortunately, as I said, time and truth are the best allies. Today, when we are speaking right now, Phil, all of those soldiers are saying, no, we did not want to accuse her of any crime, but we were forced and tortured.
Well, that's let me ask you, Paul. I hadn't known that. You're saying they have now said that they were forced to make false testimony against Victoire Ingabire?
Yes, they were forced and tortured by the DMI. DMI in Rwanda is the Directorate of Military Intelligence. So today they are saying no. What we say, we were forced to say it, and we had no choice. We had to save our lives, but this was not the truth.
Yeah, by the way, I do recall that at some moment during her trial, one of them began at that moment to change his story, and her counsel were not permitted to bring him into court.
I know. They were, even today, she's, when we are speaking right now, she's being tried again. But right now, everything is falling apart. The whole truth is coming out.
Well, I'm really glad I'm asking you about it, because I hadn't realized. Are you saying that she's being retried in the sense of a new court, or is this, or do you mean a trial by media?
She appealed.
Uh huh.
She's now on appeal.
And she has those statements saying that they had given false evidence.
No, she does not only have statements, but those men are there in the court. They are also prisoners.
Yes. It's a nightmare system they are running there. And by the way, I want to make sure I ask you about this, because I know you have raised it at the Hotel Rwanda Rusa Sabagina Foundation. That is HRRFoundation.org. You have asked former Prime Minister Tony Blair and former President Bill Clinton, both of whom have established relationships with the present leadership in Rwanda, to take up the issue of M23 guerrillas operating in Congo with support from the government of Rwanda. Could you talk about that?
Oh, that is a very exciting topic. Of course, the Rwandan president has been a good friend to Bill Clinton, the former U.S. president, and also to Tony Blair, the former UK Prime Minister. So these men actually were trapped. They were taken into a trap by President Kagame because they did not know who he is. He's someone who kills people. He's someone who tortures. He's someone who imprisons. Is someone actually who also is kind of ransacking his own country, but they did not know. And this is why the Hotel Rwanda Rusesabagina Foundation is a foundation which was created mostly by myself and a few of my friends at the beginning, and now it has been joined by many other people. Then we are raising awareness through the foundation. Mm-hmm. And in raising awareness, we are telling people like Tony Blair that, listen, our friend, you are barking a wrong tree. Mm-hmm. This is the man you are helping. This is the man who is castrating men and who has a plan to castrate 750,000 Rwandan men. This is a man whom you think that he has developed a nation, but he has developed just a small town of his brothers and sisters, what he called an elite. Mm-hmm. The rural areas, we are attracting attention from the city to the rural areas, so that the international community can know what should know what is going on within the country, because they did not know, because Tony Blair himself did not know, because Bill Clinton did not know. They go, they maybe share a glass of champagne in Kigali, but they do not know the people, the population in the rural areas have got no food. Mm-hmm. 17, for instance, in Rwanda, when it comes to medical care, this is a simple example. 83% of the medical care in the whole nation goes to maybe less than 10%, 8% actually, of Rwandans who live in the capital city, and that's it. And 17, then, if Rwandans are about 11 million, only 17% go to the 10 million, almost, or 9 point something, something big. Mm-hmm. So we have been raising awareness, letting these people know. When it comes then to rebellion movement, the Rwandan president, who is a friend of those two men we mentioned above, I mean Bill Clinton and Tony Blair, when it comes to rebellions, the Ronan president created militias. Militias were actually established in the Congo, and those are Rwandan army members who are raping women, who are raping babies, who are killing each and everyone, who are recruiting child soldiers. And for that, if you go online, I'm now talking to our listeners, and just Google a certain Bosco Ntaganda, you will see what he has been doing in that neighboring country to Rwanda. He was the leader of M23, created by the Rwandan president, and the main behind this, the organizer of that movement, is the Minister of Defense, the General Chief of Staff. The Minister of Defense is Kabarebe James. The General Chief of Staff is Kayonga Charles. They are the ones who created those militias doing all of those reps. Mm-hmm. But fortunately...
By the way, Paul, is this man Bosco, is he the one who was arrested and is now at The Hague?
Yes. Uh-huh. He's the real man who was arrested he was not arrested as such, but...
He turned himself into the U.S. Consul.
Yes, he was a rebel in the Congo, crossed the border, came back home to Rwanda because he's a Rwandan, and then he was sent to The Hague.
Mm-hmm.
The M23 is a creation of the Rwandan president, the Rwandan Minister of Defense, and the Chief of Staff.
Paul, would you know, do they intend to make that part of the charge against him? Are they going to go into who sponsored him, or are they going to focus only on him as an individual?
Well, for that, I cannot be accurate, because as of now, we do not know exactly how the tribunal is going to take its decisions. But the truth, the only truth, is that even if the court does not make such a decision, Ntaganda, that gentleman, this general who does not know how to read and write, who is supposed to be a Congolese and wants to defend himself in Kinyarwanda, in mother tongue, which is also ridiculous.
Yes, it is somewhat.
I think that this is a shame to all of those guys who have been entertaining killers. There is a hope coming in the air. The SADC. SADC is the South African or Southern Africa. As the Association for Economic Development, something like that. Led by Tanzania and South Africa, they are coming to completely eradicate and remove all of those movements which have been installed by the Rwandan president, the Rwandan government, as militias which are rooting, they are looting all the wealth, the minerals from the Congo. This is the real mission.
Yes. By the way, that is a very important element that we don't often mention, but, you know, this, why would they be so interested in Eastern Congo? Eastern Congo is absolutely wealthy in terms of its minerals. It has diamonds. And I believe uranium, and of course it has this material that is necessary for making cell phones. And that wealth has been passed over into Rwanda.
Definitely, as you might know, I don't know whether you are aware of this, but a few years ago, this was on December 10th, 2010, the international community, the United Nations, brought out a report. This report was more than clear. It was talking about stolen or looted minerals, what they call blood minerals.
Mm-hmm.
And these minerals were being looted by the Rwandan government. And just recently, we had an opportunity to influence lawmakers in countries like the United States. And lawmakers right now have initiated a law which is identifying stolen minerals.
Mm-hmm.
So as of now, this law is operative. And when this law came out, immediately the Rwandan government sent back to the Congo. You might close your ears. They sent back to the Congo 82 tons of stolen minerals from the Congo back to the owner.
Wow. That's a lot.
Too much. But 82 tons, even if they were just rocks,
mm-hmm.
we don't mind. But they brought it back to the owners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, because they couldn't sell them anymore.
That is an accomplishment. I rarely hear of one of these things being successful, where an effort takes place to identify the blood minerals. And I'm really glad that you told us that story. We have been talking now with Paul Rusesabagina from the Hotel Rwanda Foundation.org. Paul, of course, is the central figure of the film Hotel Rwanda. He's the author of An Ordinary Man. And Paul, the last point I got to tell you, in terms of listening to you, of course, we've spoken before about the war and genocide Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
You say time and the truth is the medicine. That I have to congratulate you. I absolutely agree with that.
You don't agree?
I think that's the best medicine.
I think so.
And of course, your hard work. We're very grateful, Paul. We're sorry we kept you up late.
No, it's okay. It's all right. As long as we are still raising awareness, spreading our message, our mission continues.
Well, thank you very, very much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Phil.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Paul Rusesabagina. He's somewhat qualified to speak on these matters. You're listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM.
Can we do that website one more time? HRRFoundation.org. Two R's.
Yes, yeah. Phil Connor, and yeah. I appreciate that very much. Yeah, it's got the trick there is two R's.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, and we've got some other matters to take up.